Hi, everyone. I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle, and I represent the political center and have on the political left, Shireen Gourvani.
Hello. Hey, listeners. Glad you're with us.
And on the political right, a longtime Both Sides of the Aisle contributor, a good friend of mine, Senator Dan McKay.
Sup?
Dan, you're looking sharp today in your plaid blazer.
Yeah.
And you've had a confirmation hearing already this morning. Tell the audience what you're up to these
days. Okay, so I've been in the legislature for 13 years, which is crazy to think about. I did 7 years in the Utah House and now 6 in the Utah Senate.
Time flies.
And it seems like my primary responsibilities are tax. Of the 13 years I've been in the legislature, I've been the chair of Revenue and Taxation for 12 years now. It's crazy to think, you know, we have Senator Bramble, who's a longtime tax expert. He's retiring this year. And so
you're going to be the guy.
I have to. I'm ending up shouldering a lot of the new burden. So
or is he giving you ideas?
And there's always that.
Shireen, maybe you know this, but Dan is also part of a power couple because his wife, Tawny, is on the city council of Riverton.
Yeah. And she is thinking about running for mayor next year.
So, you know, power couple here.
Oh, yeah.
Power couple.
That's an announcement. Is she ready for
I just think she's thinking about it.
She's thinking about it.
All right. Good friend. I think the world of Tawny. Shireen, let's start with you first. President Biden, he revealed late last week his plans, the plans that are being agreed to for potential ceasefire in Israel.
Yeah.
What do you know about this?
Well, what I know about this is I feel like, A, long time coming, right? B, when looking at conflicts in this region over time, typically what ends it is an outside entity saying it's time to move on. We're done. For what, however that is negotiated, that is how these conflicts have ended in the past. So I'm happy to see this turn in Biden's rhetoric. What I understand is, of course, this continues to be an incredibly, of course, we have to start with the humanitarian elements of this, right? Like the challenges of getting aid and food, water, resources to people who are desperately in need is certainly happening in the backdrop of all of this political conflict, right? And it sounds like Hamas hasn't fully agreed to this deal, but there's a communication happening.
Yeah.
But Netanyahu's in real trouble because it sounds like the far right wing of his party is quite unhappy.
Hell no.
And if that happens and they are threatening to resign, he loses power. So it just becomes a really volatile situation, but I hope that we're moving closer to peace.
Dan, I love seeing U.S. leadership here. Divides into phases. First 6 weeks would involve a complete ceasefire, eventually troop withdrawals, exchanging of hostages, and humanitarian aid. I mean, let's get this done.
Well, I like that. Something Shireen said just cued me up, right? Like, people need to keep in mind that Israel is a parliamentary democracy. And so it truly is. I mean, they have, I think it's 18 parties that are generally represented and they're generally, it's known as a coalition government.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have the coalition disappear, like far right or, you know, one part of the party that's kind of holding the coalition together, he's no longer prime minister.
Yeah.
And that is a big deal when you're trying to negotiate in good faith on one side and yet have the opportunity, you know, potentially lose the base of power. And so that's a problem. And I would go even further to say when you look at what's going on in Gaza, it is a total tragedy that it seems over and over to all of us who've watched this over the years, totally preventable.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yet here we are again, and we will be here again. Like this is going to be a fight, and this has been a fight long before any of us were paying attention. And it will be a fight long after we are, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Dan, you know me pretty well. Do I strike you as a Nikki Haley fan?
Oh, boy. Let me just think about, why not? Yeah,
Good.
I would throw you in the Nikki Haley category.
The reason, because I'm not in the former President Trump category.
Right.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And she's also had executive experience. You've had executive experience.
Well,
both women and powerful, smart women.
Like, she's articulate. Yeah.
I get
it. But she disappointed me last week. She went to Israel and she signed some artillery, I guess, and she put on it, "Finish them!" exclamation point. So this was an Israeli artillery shell.
Who do you think the artillery shell was meant for?
Yeah, well, I wonder where it came from,
too. Not where it landed.
My point is, I would have wanted something that was peaceful written on it. So I would have advised her differently.
Huh.
Yeah, yeah. Shireen?
I think Nikki Haley's a bit of a hawk, so it doesn't surprise me.
That's fair.
I guess I would also say that we live in a military industrial complex, right? And that is, I would also love to see a call for peace. I don't think it would have landed well to have that written on a shell either, right?
We have a long history, actually, believe it or not, in the military, we have a long history of nicknaming bombs.
Yes.
And,
yeah.
And you know, writing names on them and putting messages. To Natalie's point, you know, I think about them, and I can't help but think, as a former, secretary to the UN, I can't help but think she meant Hamas, mm-hmm. right? And not mm-hmm. like
the people.
Palestinian yeah. people. Mm-hmm. Like, and that's one of the things is so hard to separate in this fight is the fight is actually between Hamas and the Israeli government. And that ruling class keeps the Palestinian people down just as much as, you know, relationships with Israel are perceived to do. And so, unfortunately, until the people can, you know, rise up themselves and help solve this problem with Hamas, I think I understand Nikki Haley's sentiment. I can understand your desire for peace.
Yeah.
Maybe you're both right.
Dan, we don't want to go into it too much, but I just want to get your take on the conviction of former President Donald Trump. What is it, 34 felonies? Mm-hmm. Not whether it should happen or if it's wrong, but you're a trained attorney. What happens next for this guy? I mean, we know that he'll get his, sentencing. I just named sentencing. What do they call it?
Yeah, that's what it is.
Sentencing. Is it sentencing?
Yeah,
okay, July 11th. I say it because it's like, you sentence only, fines? I guess you do.
Sentencing only occurs if there's not appeals pending, right? So it will depend on the Trump legal team as to whether or not, you know, they file an appeal. It seems like that's very likely, especially when you look at the consequences of what it does during this process. And I don't think the courts really want to be involved in this political process. And so there's that part of it. And you also look at like the creative, I'll just be kind to the prosecutor, the creative legal theories that then, you know, gave rise to these felonies. It's just, you know, I think there's a lot of questions about it, and I'm pretty sure the courts are going to want to look at this and have a consideration.
Shireen, what are you predicting?
I actually think that Trump would like to go to jail, even if it's briefly, because his best fundraising days mm-hmm. have been tied around the mugshot. Just actually the announcement of these charges or all of these pieces of it benefit him. And I think that we should continue to expect that when the grift is good, the grift continues. And so that is what I think he's going to do.
Jureen almost always, when she talks about Donald Trump, she uses the word grift or grifter.
Let's write that down. When the grift is good, the grift continues. That's pretty
all right.
Funny. I'm just going to say, I disagree with the grift component, but I understand. I think a lot of it comes down to political theater in some ways. And maybe it's political theater and that's grift. Maybe they're, you know, interchangeable.
Not so far apart.
Yeah, but I don't know. You got to get a nation's attention who aren't paying attention.
It surprised me that they picked July 11th for the sentencing 4 days before the Republican convention.
They were probably busy the July 4th. Otherwise, they would have done it then. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I don't know. I was thinking that just to kind of like turn down the pressure, it might have been better to do it after the convention.
Well, that's what. Okay, so on this whole thing, that's the one thing that scratches my head. Okay, the average time for a criminal trial to get to a trial through discovery, everything else, the average time for that to occur is like 2 years,
mm-hmm.
right? 2-3 years mm-hmm. in Utah. So the idea that 34 felonies indictment in, you know, in the winter, just this last winter, I think it was December, if I can't remember, it was September.
Yeah, this
October.
One was an early one, but
But anyways, so you get through the indictment, you get through all this, and like the fact that we're at trial and through conviction in less than 1 year, like that tells me the president also wasn't fighting, you know, or Donald Trump wasn't fighting against, you know, the mm-hmm. indictment type of thing.
Interesting.
To Shireen's point that, hey, this all leans into a show, but if I was the prosecutor looking at all of this, I wonder if I'm not adding to the show. Because to Shireen's point, if we're continuing to throw money, like if his best mm-hmm. fundraising days are around this, feels like the one thing the press has never been able to do with Donald Trump is leave him out of the headlines. They can't.
Yeah.
It's like
he forces himself back into. Yeah.
I don't even know if he forces it. It's almost like I think it's a conditioned response, and they can't help but cover him, even when they know it helps him.
Yeah.
Sure. Shereen, we got the flag guy in the studio.
Oh, my goodness.
Dan, you know, everyone
we
should
talk
leave
about flags?
Everybody should leave a legacy, and you've got a lot more than flags, but that's one of yours. But it brings up Samuel Alito, the Supreme Court justice who has refused to recuse himself from the January 6th cases, even though he's had this flag incident or incidents. Shereen, you
okay.
can cue it up
well,
better than that.
So what I'd like to say is there's a really fascinating daily, if you listen to the New York Times Daily podcast on this a couple of days ago or late last week, that helps describe sort of the timeline of it, which is that reporters had heard that soon after January 6th, that at the Alito's home in New Jersey, an upside down flag went up. This symbol has been used many times across many protests, but was most recently, I would say, fair to say, associated with January 6th. And
the upside down flag?
Yeah. And the idea was government in distress. It has a long history going back to ships, I think, right? Anyway, the point of it was used during the Vietnam War as a form of protest. It's been used in many, many different protests, but that flag goes up. And then a second flag appeared, which is also highly associated with the January 6th riot events. I believe it's called the Appeal to Heaven flag, and that one was at their beach house. So there are two flags. So the thing that I think is like extra about this is they then reach out to Alito. They reach out to the press person for the Supreme Court justice. He replies eventually with a statement that basically throws his wife under the bus and says, I'm not much of a flag guy, but like she's got a flag for every occasion, and this flag flew. And then now I think the fallout of it afterwards that is especially concerning is when you think about the ideologies that would be associated with that, when we think about the expectation we have for the court and the highest court in our land, now Alito has said he's not going to recuse himself from these January 6th cases. So I feel like it adds to a mounting body of really concerning reporting and behavior from our Supreme Court justices when we're thinking about the trips paid for by, you know, conservative mega donor for Clarence Thomas, or we think about this flag incident. It's not good.
Dan, we only have like 30 seconds on it, but your reaction. I mean, what to make of this?
Look, I love flags and happy to fly them. It's interesting that it's interesting what we choose to assign to meanings for them. The Appeal to Heaven flag specifically was flown right outside of San Francisco's City Hall. They have a display of all of the flags that have represented America at one point. It's this really cool display. The Appeal to Heaven flag is actually one of the flags that was considered part of the nation's history of flags.
And so is the Confederate flag.
It flies there as well. Right. But they took down the Confederate flag not long ago. But the Confederate flag, we can debate that for just a minute. But the Appeal to Heaven flag is not associated with the Confederacy. It's not associated with an event that way. It's more considered with its historical significance. And the fact that a January 6th grab, I mean, what this means is that the Tea Party flag, the Gadsden flag, is probably another victim coming soon, right? Of these reassigning meanings or these assigning meanings to flags. Just shows you, I mean, and we had this conversation long ago. People don't care about flags, except everyone really cares about flags and their meanings. And that's, an upside down American flag certainly tells a message. And, you know, there are plenty of people who on January 6th on both sides of the aisle were concerned about the government.
Yeah. Let's take a short break and then I'll give you my two bits. Stay tuned, everyone.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on Utah Public Radio. We love to hear from listeners like you. If you would like to send us a comment, email bsotapodcast@gmail.com. That's bsotapodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Shereen Gourbani on the left.
Dan McKay on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. I still want to talk about flags for just a little bit longer.
Okay, go ahead.
I just have to say in the political moderate world, I mean, do you not think that Justice Alito and his wife like maybe talked about these things before she put that flag up? It just strikes me that there's not as much distance between these two people as he's tried to make it seem. But Dan, I mean, come on.
It depends. Who runs the flagpole? In every house, somebody runs the decorations,
I'm telling you. My husband and I are just closer. Like, we move together as a unit.
Yeah. I guess what I just think about is the kind of feedback or reaction we'd be getting to regularly see political flags on the left from our what are considered more liberal Supreme Court justices. I don't think it would read well. I was even thinking about a pride flag. Like, I'd be curious if there was a history of that. It would be interesting to know.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I do think that we have expectations for this court. They are not meeting them, but yeah.
Dan, what flag is flying over the Utah State Capitol today?
Well, we've tried to strike a peace accord with our flags. And on the west side, we still have the American flag. On the east side, we still have the historic state flag, which is the blue seal flag. And then in the middle, in front of the Capitol, we have the American flag and the new state flag.
And is that what you call it, the new flag?
I call it the Utah flag.
The Utah flag. Okay.
But since our listeners aren't.
Does the east flag or the blue blanket with the logo on the seal on it, does it go away eventually?
I think that's a question for, the governor had Governor Cox had an executive order that left it in place as a try to make some peace in the issue. It didn't work. I think for sure during the Cox administration, we'll for sure see it fly.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. Shereen, Pride Month.
Yes.
And I bring it up in this transition here because our governor had a declaration about bridge building month and it related to Pride. Did you watch that play out, read the news coverage on that?
Yeah, I've been following this because I'd never fail to forget that a lot of Spencer Cox's prominence came from a speech that he gave in response to a shooting at a gay club, at a gay nightclub. Okay. So people who remember this moment felt like it was a demonstration of the kind of humanity that I think people felt was really at the heart of a version of Utah Republican politics. Mm-hmm. It was a moment that I think many people were proud of. Mm-hmm. To see him go from that to a pretty decent declaration, I believe, in his first year on Pride Month, to removing LGBTQ+ from the proclamation altogether to now bridge building. Is it an acknowledgement of a reality that he lives inside of? Maybe. For me, it is a demonstration, honestly, of cowardice. And I find it very frustrating. Mm-hmm. And it kind of goes back to this idea of, if we're going to disagree better, then let's start showing what that looks like here in our own backyard to have real conversations about the values that we hold.
Yeah.
And I would love to see more bravery and, that he used to demonstrate around this issue.
Dan, I can't wait to hear your commentary on this, but Shereen, I'd forgotten about that original speech that he gave. It's the one where he said, how did you feel about this shooting? And then how did you feel about it when you found out it was at 4 a.m.
At a gay club. Yeah.
And he was juxtaposing that these are human beings.
Yes.
With needs and life experiences.
And live in safety.
And yet politics makes it so if someone who is that sympathetic and loving of our gay population to go from that moment to be at a moment where he's not even using the term LGBTQ and different things, it's because he's trying to stay elected.
Yeah.
And I struggle here because I'm like, well, I'd want a guy like Spencer in there because I think in his heart he's of a right mind here, but he can't live out that way and stay elected. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think the governor is trying to walk a careful line of his personal feelings and the difficulty of representing a populace who may not be in the same spot as you personally, right?
He just said this better than I did.
Yeah, which is a first. Let's write that down.
Put that on the notes, too.
Yeah, write that down.
Okay.
I might walk out. And so I'd say when you're trying to make that balance, the hard part is when you get in front of the electorate, and you're in front of them, like the bus can run you over. And I think the governor feels that way or has felt that pressure. But I think the other thing, the attitude on the LGBT issues has changed significantly over the 3 years of his administration, right? And I look at that, and if you look at the temperature,
remember in, 2008, we're still talking about a gay marriage ban in the state of Utah. We have all those things. And then overnight with the Kitchen v. Herbert decision and others, like, gay marriage is in, and you see public opinion actually shift overnight in Utah on the issue as well. But now we've seen almost a backlash of public opinion about just how much and how prevailing and some of these things. And I don't actually think that they are Utah issues, so to speak, as much as the national conversation on this has just elevated so much more. And to Shireen, used to always give me a hard time. And I think about this all the time when I hear her voice in my head. She's like, you always want to talk about culture wars. And the interesting thing is there is this sense of a culture war. I'm not saying it's good or it's bad, but there is this sense of this fight for the heart of America. And it doesn't feel like we're pulling together on the issue anymore. Mm-hmm. It feels like we're trying to pull apart. And that's
and sometimes that happens then because of overreach, right? You're trying to do something better, but you go too far.
Yeah.
And then the other side reacts and goes too far.
Yeah. And I think there was an acceptance, right, of Governor Cox and his speech and that kind of thing. Even on the Republican side, even on the gay marriage side of things, it's a government benefit. You provide it to couples, fine. But I think if you look at where, though, it kind of leaped from that perspective, it got troubling. And I think that's where the electorate is concerned as well.
Did you go to the parade?
You bet week? I did. I was in the parade. And I was in the parade with Project Rainbow. And I'll just say, like, yes, I understand your sense that there is a backlash. But what I see is states, I think last year was over 400 anti-LGBTQ pieces of legislation that were introduced, often done in ways that really cause significant harm to a very small portion of our population. And I just don't believe that's A, the role of government, right? Or B, us living our values of freedom, liberty, dignity, right? I don't think that it aligns. And so I just feel so strongly that if you have, there is a pride event for everyone, whether it's a drag bingo, there are, family friendly like events that happened all through. There was a Pups and Pride event that happened on Friday. There are all sorts of different ways that you can engage and get to know folks in the community. It has been one of the most enriching parts of my life, an identity I also hold, right, personally. And I just feel very strongly that it is for me to see that parade, to see that giant rainbow flag, it like tears me up at the Capitol, and for one kid to know that they are valued and they should stay here.
Yeah. And I don't think, to me, right, I have gay friends, my sister's gay, and I think the more and more in population, everybody's coming to understand that the way is acceptance, right? And the way is like putting our arms around people, like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
The hard part is, it's this fear, I guess, maybe, that acceptance becomes encouragement. And that's like, sure. I think that's the border.
There's also a zero-sum thinking. If somebody gets a freedom, gets a protection, then I lose something. And I understand that people feel that. They feel that they have lost something. But I can tell you that there's room for everybody to be safe, to feel honored, to have freedom and dignity.
Yeah. I love what the two of you are sharing. Hey, let's go to Ryan Smith and Smith Entertainment Group and downtown Salt Lake City, where so many proposals are being thrown out there. But there's talk now about taking what is often called John Stockton Drive. It's Third West near the Delta Center and putting that highway
underground,
tunneling it. I love public investment. I love, love, love it.
Really?
Yes, I do. Dan's like, Shireen gets excited about gay pride parades. Yeah. Natalie gets excited about public investment.
I'm actually also super into public investment.
Well, what I love about it is it's you do it for the future.
Yeah.
You don't do it for today. You take your tax dollars and you try and do it for the future.
Yeah.
And I think that when you invest in the core, you create magic for the whole region. So anyway, I'm super excited about it, Dan.
Yeah,
and you're real close to this because you've.
Well, and I will fully confess that, when it came time for me to ask questions about what direction we should be looking at it from the state, my first call was to Natalie and how do I do this, right?
You're sweet.
So, and it was interesting as we, the funny thing is, and I'll admit this here and nobody else has to know because we can just keep it between the three of us.
Yeah,
but, Natalie helped me write my floor speech. I mean, she was very, very helpful. And I'll just say, The more we can keep our downtown viable, strong, and, as a compelling economic factor and not be chasing business and people away from it,
the better off our whole state will be. Mm-hmm. We are one of the few states in the country where our state capital and our economic capital are in the same place. Mm-hmm. And that is not very common, and we got to make sure we protect it.
And it won't stay, yeah, if you don't stay diligent about it. We got one more minute. Shereen, what else do you want to share with our audience?
I would just love to... I feel like the thing that I want to talk about is lawns really quickly.
Do it.
You do not have to overwater your lawn. We are still, even though we are seeing major increases in our water in the state, much better situation than we were a couple years ago. I would just encourage people to really go conservative when it comes to watering your lawns.
Dan, I spend a lot of time along the Jordan River Parkway. I was there last night. It's high. Jordan River's high right now.
It is moving too. That water's
quick.
Yeah,
it's fast. I said to my husband, if our dog jumped in, we wouldn't be able to get her out.
Yeah, it is
tough. Because it's swift current, and then there's no banks where you can climb out.
Which, of course, then becomes
erosion. That's a message. Be careful out there.
Be careful out there
with your animals,
water.
With your children.
Kids, yeah.
Dan, we got 15 seconds. Anything on water?
We love you, Utah. I got nothing else on water. I think we're doing a great job. Keep up the good work.
Yeah. All right. Hey, Dan, thank you so much for joining us. Shereen, love all your commentary. The program's produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks for listening, everyone.